The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Hello, listeners, to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Help our podcast stay free to download with minimal ads by taking a short new survey from Podcast One. Responses will help align the appropriate advertisers to our audience. The survey is short and completely anonymous. It takes no more than 5 minutes. There are two easy ways to do the survey. You can go to podcastone.com/mysurvey or go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner. If you have filled out a survey in the past, we thank you, but we still need you to do it again. You do all of us at Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, and a podcast won a huge favor by filling it out. Thank you for supporting our program and for taking the time to complete the survey. Once again, there are two easy ways to do the survey, podcastone.com/mysurvey or podcastone.com and click on the survey banner.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Welcome to another edition of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Really looking forward to our conversation we're going to have a little bit later on in the show with our special guest, Hall of Famer Ken Griffey Jr. The Kid joins us here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, as we start rolling through the mid part of this hot part of the summer here in Southeast Michigan. Nothing like some fun baseball talk here on the podcast. And in fact, he'll also talk about Michigan football because he had an offer from Bo Schembechler to come here and play football, but I think he made the smart choice. He played baseball, and we'll get to Ken Griffey Jr. a little bit later on in the show. But we are now on the heels of Father's Day. We have Jack Harbaugh with us. And Jack, first of all, happy Father's Day. I hope you had a great day. Did you get calls from all of the kids and grandkids as accordingly that you're supposed to?
We log them in. You know, that's our way of handling that. John got in earliest this year. He got in about 8:42, if I recall, and we had a nice conversation. He was off to watching his daughter Allison compete in a huge lacrosse tournament on the East Coast. Teams from Philadelphia, Long Island, New Jersey—I mean, the best of lacrosse in that part of the country—is on display this last weekend. And John had a chance to watch them play, and then Jim was kind of ran into him. You know, it wasn't a call. I just ran into him. We had the Father's Day ceremony or Father's Day camp on Father's morning of Father's Day, and ran into him, and he gave me one of those Happy Father's Day, and that was kind of it. You know, there wasn't any
nothing formal.
I was looking for some other accolades and some other kind words, but it was just kind of Happy Father's Day, and we were on. And then Joni, she had her whole family on, which was very unique. We hadn't done that before, and they were all on kind of a— they have a deal now. I don't know if you know, Ira. You can get a lot of people on the phone. It's not just one person talking to another person. It's kind of a group phone
call. Yeah,
you can
conference a bunch of people in.
Conference. I think that's what they call it, conference.
So they start calling if you're in multiple locations. So Joni would call. If she's not, say, with Tom, she calls Tom, and then Tom calls Riley. And if and then they call you, and they just get everything. Yep, they lock it in. And
I wasn't familiar with that technology. And I don't know if it were that, or they might have just been in the same room just yelling. I could have.
Speakerphones work, too.
They might have done it that way. But so we had them all on the phone, and each of them wished us. And then Addie and Katie went to the camp, the Father's Day camp, and they had nice cards for me. Jack, I don't know what happened. I didn't get anything from Jack, and he didn't seem to— when I mentioned to him that he was the only one that could write that I didn't get a card from, and he just kind of blew me off. And maybe next year is kind of the attitude that he gave me. So looking forward to next year, hoping we can bring Jack out of his little shell on Father's Day. But every day is Father's Day. I mean, every single day we wake up, it's Father's Day for us, isn't it? We get to enjoy that day 365 days a year. We celebrate Father's Day, don't we?
We try. We try. Although it was great when recently, maybe it was right after Mother's Day, and it happened again right before Father's Day. Grace looks at me, and you know, 5 years old, these innocent eyes. She goes, "When's Kids Day?" Kids Day. We're like, "Wait, Kids Day? Every day is Kids Day, without a doubt. No question, the kids are the spotlight every day." But you do have that very unique relationship with Jack, where you You have your 3:30 standing baseball time, first pitch in the afternoon. Obviously, you're there to support him at all his games and cheering him on. So for him, maybe he just says, well, you're not my dad. You're my grandfather.
That's my I'm along with Gracie. I kind of subscribe to Gracie's philosophy. Kids' Day. When is Grandparents' Day? I mean, do we have a day? Can you kind of research that for me at some point in time?
There is a Grandparents' Day, and it's funny you bring that up because we'll get into the conversation. Grandparents' Day is actually Sunday, September 9th.
So
you get the short end because it's football season. It's football season. It's right after the home opener, but you'll get the short end because it's football season.
So what you're saying, everyone's busy. You know, Tom's getting into camp for basketball, and John and Jim are playing football. The last thing they think about is Grandparents' Day, and the kids are going to games, so they don't think about it. So I'm going to circle that on my calendar. I'm going to make sure a week or so before I get cards out to them, letting them know that it's time to recognize
reminder cards
for grandma and grandpa.
That's really, John may be in the toughest position because that's actually a work day for John. Opening day of the football, of the NFL season, the opening Sunday. So that's a real work day they're all work days when they're getting camps ready and getting ready for the third week of the season. But that's a game day for John down there in Baltimore for the opener.
I think back, you know, coaching, game day and coaching. I mean, you are totally numb. I mean, you have no recollection of anything. All you're doing is just, how can a man feel so miserable and work so hard to feel so bad knowing something may go wrong? You know, there may be a call that you make you wish you had back, or a play you wish you'd have repped a few more times offensively or defended it a couple more times defensively, and you're going to be the one that let your team down by not preparing them properly, and you're standing out there looking over the field, oh, God, why am I in this play? And then the game starts, and your whole personality changes. Now you're competing, and you're in the game. So John will not be in the mood to be reminded of Grandparents' Day on September 9th.
I can imagine that. I remember talking to coaches whose birthdays fall during football season or basketball season, whatever the sport they coach. And I'm like, so have you – you know, what'd you do to celebrate your birthday? And they're like,
birthday?
It's season. What birthday? Like, it's just another day. Because if your birthday is on a Thursday and you're a football coach, well, I mean, you might have a moment because Thursday's family night, but it's prep mode for a game 2 days later or for John 3 days later. So, yeah, if your birthday is in season for you as a coach, the amount of coaches that, to me, they celebrated those birthdays when they were kids, and then they celebrated them when they retire. And there's no birthdays in between.
A story on that is Joni and Tom were going to get married. It's like 23, 24 years ago, and they announced they were going to get married, came over to the house, talked to Jackie and me, and told her the wedding would be in October. And I told them, I said, that's great. Jackie and I support you. Be sure to send us a video because we will.
You were still coaching.
We will not be at the wedding. What do you mean you won't be at the wedding? We have a football game to play at Western Kentucky University, and I'm coaching my football team. Dad, it's my wedding. Joni, it's my livelihood. So they always said, well, we can't have it in the winter. Tom's coaching. We can't have it in July because Tom has camps. Can't have it in June because, you know, the football guy, college guys, they have camps. And when are we going to have it? And they had it on Memorial Day weekend in May. The last week in May was the only date. Can you imagine, Ira? The only date in the entire year that the entire family, they weren't involved, the family wasn't involved in some kind of a activity, a athletic activity.
So tell us about the camp a little bit. It must have been a lot of fun.
Camp was outstanding with a capital O. Unbelievable. Now, I've had previous experiences with father-son camps. Tom Crean at Indiana University had a father-son camp, and he was running the camp, so he couldn't be actively involved. So I was 70 years old, Ira, at the time, and he asked me if I would be a stand-in. Now, it wasn't like our camp yesterday. Tom decided it was going to be like he was running a basketball practice for 2 days. I mean, we were running drills, then we were doing box-out drills, we were doing rebounding drills, we were doing fast break drills. I mean, we were doing it all for 2 days. The first day I thought, well, representing my grandson, you know, I can't fall out of any drill. I mean, I went through every single drill. I'd be under the basket on a rebound drill, and my body goes up. And I thought I was like a foot, 2 feet in the air. And I looked down, and my feet had not left the floor. I mean, I was still firmly locked to the floor. My arms were up in the air. Some guy was reaching over the top of me, just snatching the ball. He's 35, 40-year-old father dealing with a 70-year-old grandfather with no compassion whatsoever. And the funniest part, Ira, Riley will tell you, I know he's listening. He'll tell you the story. The ball, we were doing a drill, like a 5-on-5 or a 3-on-3 game, and the ball went to the next court. So I was the closest to the ball, so I decided I would chase it. Now, just picture this, if you will. Close your eyes and picture this. I'm chasing the ball, taking little bitty grandfather steps, right? The ball is rolling in front of me, so I reach down to pick up the ball, and I go so slowly to the ball that the ball has rolled away from me. Now what I do, I have to regather myself. I'm taking those little bitty steps again. I'm going down, and now I'm giving myself a little break, knowing that it's going to take you some time to get down to the ball. So now I reach down, and the ball still has moved away from me. Now the fathers are just roaring at this whole man chasing the ball down the court. And so Riley comes over, and I know how he must have felt. You know, I said, Riley, hang with me. Next time that ball rolls, I'm going to sprint by it, at least 10 feet by it. I'm going to turn my body, and it's going to roll right into my hands so I don't embarrass you. So he gave me a little shot in the ribs, and he says, I think that'll do it, Papa. I think that'll do it. We can handle it with that. So that was my first experience. Next day, I opted out. I just said I'm not going to do it, and didn't do it, and do not regret it whatsoever. So this year, Jim's was totally different. They had fathers and sons and daughters and mothers and babies carrying month-old and two-month-old babies coming out, 250 or so youngsters there. And they started out with some exercises, and then they had some relays, had a punt, pass, and kick. Jim is amazing. Jim Harbaugh, we all know Jim Harbaugh. He put the fathers in a punt, pass, and kick, and he made the cutoff line at 50. You know where I'm going with this, right? Mm-hmm. 50 and older in one group and 50 and younger at the other group. He was taking no chances that there was a younger than 50 that might be able to throw it farther than he did.
So he put
put him in the older group, and he threw it out, I think, 45 yards or so, and he won the competition. But the second guy, he threw it out there about 41, and I could see Jim's heart just pounding right through his shirt, thinking maybe he wouldn't win that competition. But they had that competition and autographs, and the players were there, and they were just magnificent with the little kids, all the players, and just with them and walking around and the autographs at the end. And it must have been about a 3-4 hour session from about 8:30 in the morning to about 12:30 in the evening. So Greg Madison said it best. He said, when the word gets out on the Father's Day camp, we're going to have to cut this thing off at about 350 or 400 people because everybody had such a great time.
That's definitely supply and demand is going to come into play on that one. I was already talking to Sam. Next year, his kid will be over 5. My kid has just turned 5. So next year, we are going to go out and we are going to participate in the camp. And we will both still qualify in the 50 and under category. So Jim doesn't have to worry about my – okay, he doesn't worry about my throwing punt, pass, or kick. I don't think any of those – anyone should really be concerned about how I'm going to do fair in those competitions. But I can only imagine how much fun the parents, the older generation of the two – I mean, the kids, obviously, they're out there, they're having a great time. But I mean, there aren't that many opportunities for us older guys to go out there and have fun like that. So we get to go out there and kind of be campers too. I'm sure they had a blast. Plus – I mean, how often do they get to run around the field, you know, for Michigan football just to, you know?
They had hit a dummy drill where they had going about 20 yards, you had to do an obstacle. And then you had to go over some dummies that were on the field. And then there was a stand-up dummy that you had to hit. You know, the little kids would do it, and they would hit it. And then the dads did it. And I thought, somebody's going to get seriously hurt. I mean, they would ball themselves up. You know, we talked about the power producing angles. I mean, they were powered. They exploded that thing, and they were just grinding. I thought, oh my goodness, this is disaster before our very eyes. But fortunately, no one got. But I did tell you at the go back to the Indiana camp again. I tell you what a profound influence it had on my life. The first day, we had a guy go down with an Achilles. A father, an Achilles.
Yeah, that's not good.
Oh, but what happens is your mind, you know, these guys are all athletes, I'm sure, at some level. your mind is telling you you can do things that your body can't – checks that your body can't cash. So I was very mindful of that as we watched our camp, Father's Day camp, and we had no serious injuries.
I think that is why – one of the reasons why they canceled the alumni football flag football game they used to have here around spring game in the past, because they did have same things. You had, you know, guys that played college football, maybe played pro football, and they're back out there. I can do this. And they had a couple of pretty serious injuries. Yeah, we don't need our guys getting hurt. We don't need dads getting hurt. We don't want kids getting hurt. But kids, they have plenty of energy and they have plenty of athleticism, so they're fine anyway.
On your mark, get set, go. Double Dare is back on Nickelodeon. That's right. The first and the best game show for kids returns Monday, June 25th at 8 o'clock. That's Monday at 8 o'clock. Double Dare legend Mark Summers is teaming up with new host Liza Koshy to bring you more mind-boggling trivia, larger-than-life obstacles, big prizes, and more slime than ever before. Gear up for the messiest game show on TV. The all-new Double Dare premieres Monday, June 25th at 8 o'clock, Monday at 8 on Nickelodeon.
It was a great Father's Day weekend here in Southeast Michigan, a great Father's Day camp, and a great father-son story is coming up next as we are joined. It's me, it's Coach, it's the other coach, Jim Harbaugh, who you've not heard from yet. It's also Matt Dudek joining us. It will be Ken Griffey Jr. And Jack, I mean, doesn't get a whole lot better than Ken Griffey Jr.
And another father, I know we're probably running over here, but another father-grandson story with Riley. We were in Milwaukee, and he was about 9 years old. And, you know, we do this, and grandfathers come to the ballpark, and that's Ken Griffey Jr. right there. You know, that's – well, Ken – and he looks at me like, Ken Griffey – his dad, Ken Griffey, told him about back-to-back homers that they hit, his father and son talking about their great records, home runs. You put their two home run totals together, I think you're right there pretty close to the top, and I'm going through all that. But I'm going to tell you something about him. When he comes to bat, I want you to watch him. He has the sweetest swing in all of baseball. Ted Williams, you don't know him back in the 40s. He had a nice, sweet swing, but no swing like Ken Griffey Jr. Can't wait for the show and ask him about that swing because it was sweet.
Our guest here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Baseball great Ken Griffey Jr. But we have to go back before the bait. Well, he was a baseball great in high school too. Man, can high schools produce this much talent? Barry Larkin, Ken Griffey Jr., Veda Murray, all from the same high school, all within like a 5-6 year window of time. I don't think you can get much better than that coming out of one high school.
No, that's good.
We were lucky. We were lucky. Actually, you know, for me, I wanted to play football, and at that time, Muller was the best school for in the city and the state for football. And you know, it was a 30-minute drive every day for my parents until I was able to start driving.
So you almost and you had an opportunity to come. You had a scholarship offer here from Bo to come join your teammate Veda here, but I think the baseball thing worked out okay.
it was a tough decision. But you take a 17-year-old kid, they go, okay, we're going to take you 3 years of college, or you can turn pro, and we're going to give you $160,000.
And you took the $160,000.
Yeah. First pick of the country. And what, you know, what's cool about baseball is that if you're a high school kid and you're a pretty high pick, they still pay for college.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell her, I threaten all my kids, like, I still have 4 years of eligibility, so don't mess with me. I will come.
We love baseball, Ken. My dad, Jack Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh, we love baseball. And what would you have done, Dad? You love football, too. You love football. Coming out of high school, you go be a drafted baseball player.
I was a 220 hitter.
Just imagine you
From either side of the plate, I was 220 hitter. So the baseball was not good. Ken, I want to share this story with you. Jim and I have met Willie Mays, and we believe that Willie Mays may be the most gifted baseball player in the history of the game. I was with my grandson, Riley Crean, Tom Crean's son, and we were at a baseball game in Milwaukee when you were playing, and you came up to bat, and I said, Riley, this man has the sweetest swing of anyone that's ever played the game of baseball. And I do believe that you had the sweetest swing of anyone that I've ever had a chance to watch. About 5 years later, I asked Riley that same question, and he remembered that conversation. So tell me, how did you develop the sweetest swing in all of baseball?
You know, if you look at me early, I stood like my dad. You know, I was a little crouched over. And I think after year two, I started standing up a little straighter, and I was able to hit the ball a little further. The crazy thing is that the only thing it affected was that low and away pitch that nobody hits anyway. So I was able to lay off that for the most part. But, you know, it's just practice. It's different in baseball than any other sport, that I can go in my room and look at, you know, what I'm doing. You know, go in a mirror and make, you know, dry swing. You know, I can think about, you know, okay, what this pitcher has to offer, what he's done to me in the past, and just learning and continuing to learn. And even if I didn't have answers, I still had friends and family members, especially my dad, that I can call and say, hey, I'm stuck. Can you help me? Yeah. And, you know, there's been plenty of times where I've called him at 2 o'clock in the morning, waking him up, and he's got a day game. Talk about, hey, what are you doing? I said, hey, I need some help. We'd go through it.
As a baseball great, who do you think is the greatest of all time
baseball
Swing.
Player?
See, we have this argument all the time. I don't consider anybody the greatest of all time due to the different eras and different things that they had to deal with in their life. How many home runs would Willie Mays and Hank Aaron hit if he had better shoes, better travel, better equipment, better training facilities? So you can't say this person is the greatest. I just look at it as he's the greatest player I've ever seen, or he's the greatest player in his era.
It's a great way to frame it.
Junior, I have the blessing to sit here every day and see Jack and see Coach and that father-son relationship and them talk and bounce things off each other. What was it like playing with your dad? I mean, you've talked about this probably hundreds and thousands of times, but what was it like? And you guys had back-to-back home runs and played in the – you know, what was it like to have your dad in the clubhouse with you?
When he got there, he said, hey, this is your team. I'm just here to – I get a front row seat of something that – nobody else has ever done. Watch their son play. And we had a blast. I mean, you know, he took me out to lunch every day, which was great. we talked about baseball. We talked, you know, because at that time I was only 20. So, you know, the give you an idea, he was like, we had a bet. Whoever got the first hit, the second one had to pay for dinner, unless the second one was able to tie it. So if he gets a hit first at bat, I get my hit first at bat. So that was washed. So, and then we go to the back-to-back home run. He hits his, and he touches home plate, and he shakes my hand, and he goes, that's how you do it, son.
What a great story.
And I'm like, wow. So they gave me the green light. I hit mine out, and I couldn't wait to get back in the dugout and shake his hand. And I shook his hand. He made me shake everybody's hand first. And then we sat next to each other, and he's reflecting on baseball history. And as a 20-year-old, I'm still worried about the game.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand what baseball history meant until I started passing people up on the home run chart when I started getting 550, 570, 585, when I started passing up, you know, Frank Robinson and people like that. I didn't understand the magnitude of baseball history until then, because now I go back to I was that 20-year-old, and now I understand what my dad felt during the game that now I'm feeling during the game.
Boy, that picture on the bench when we were sitting next to your father after you had the back-to-back home runs, that's got to be what a memento that is for people that love the game of baseball.
It was great. I mean, he led our team in hitting for the 6 weeks that he played. He hit 377. But I got to tell him two things that he's told me all my life. And the first thing was you protected me for 17 years. Now it's my turn to protect you, because he batted second, I batted third. And the second thing is, he lived in my house. I said, while you live in my house, you live by my rules. he moved out. My mom thought it was great, but, you know, a couple days later, he moved out. He was like, I'm not dealing with that.
Gotta get out of here.
Not under those parameters.
We have one thing, Ken, at our place. When I'm at Jim's house, he controls the remote. When he comes to my house, I control the remote. So that's the way the rules that we have when we visit each other.
I don't touch my dad's remote at his house. let's see. My mom controls. I told her she's the only person that lives in one house and still runs about five. Cause I got,
we can understand that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We're like, okay, it's time to clean up. Okay, all right, we got to get this stuff out. But no, we – you know, the father and son thing is very important. The relationships that, you know, I tried to build with my kids. I learned from my dad, you know, being able to do things. I know that things are different because of the money situation. My dad wasn't able to fly home like I was, but, you know, I'm still there and he's still there. I mean, he drove from Philly to Arizona to watch my son, my daughter graduate.
Oh my goodness.
He picked up his three brothers. They drove, and then he drove back, and I'm like, you can fly. He's like, nah, me and my brothers wanted to make a road trip. They stayed a week in Arizona and did some things. But, yeah, I think he's gone to the grandfather side, which is kind of terrifying for me because I don't get the phone calls that I'm normally used to having. He skips me and like, hey, how's Trey doing? How's Kevin doing? How's Taryn doing? I'm like, yo, what about me? He's like, yeah, you're all right.
Sounds familiar.
Oh, you get those conversations too?
No doubt. Well, my dad lives right next door to me, Ken. So he's got a ball diamond in the backyard. He's got bases. He's got all the bats and gloves and balls are down there. And my five-year-old and him have a standing game at 3:30 every day. And then they play soccer in the basement. And they got an indoor football game that they play where my dad sits on the couch and throws Jack the ball, and he's got to try to touch a pillow on the couch. It's there's nothing better. It's as good as it possibly gets.
I have one question for you. He's not the same parent that raised you, though.
Not even like in the same ballpark. Yeah, to use a baseball analogy, not in the same ballpark.
Like, I would have gotten in trouble for all these things, and now you're just doing it. What's funny is my mom in 1978 went to Japan and bought this couch home, and you know you weren't even allowed to sit in that room, let alone. You know, Trey at age three takes a blue Sharpie and draws all of them. I look at him, I look at her, I look at him. I said, "Look, I'm gonna take this butt whooping only one time for you." She looks at him and goes, oh, he's such a little Picasso. I'm like, really? I would have got killed for that. You just allowed this to happen?
There's no doubt about it. I'll give you one. When they're doing their indoor football game, they do it right there in the living room. And my mom is really particular. I mean, she's got things. She's got, you know, a flower in a vase. There's pictures on the wall. And everything's meticulous. And they're throwing the ball, whipping it back and forth, you know. This nearly misses the vase with the flower, and he and my mom's like, what is going on in here? Then a ball goes off the wall, the picture drops and, you know, goes to the ground. My mom starts getting upset. My dad pops up, it's not broken, puts it back up. You know, you got to take this outside, you got to take it to the basement. He goes, no, we're fine, let the boy play. It's a totally different world.
Like, wait a minute, hold on.
This is the same guy that I remember. Yeah.
What happens? No. What happens, Dad? What is he? You let him win at things, too. Here's the other one.
You never let me win. That's the only thing I feel badly about, the winning part. I wished I were more like with you and John. You know, at 5 years old, I wanted to whip you. I wanted to win. I didn't want ever let you have the upper hand in anything. But grandchildren are different. You want them to have success.
So that's what it is. Well, I'm not in a rush to have any right now, but okay, I can. Yeah, because I see my dad. I'm like, really? He told Taryn no. She asked him for some money. He's like, no. Instead, he reached in his pocket to give her money.
We just had a conversation about that this morning with the grandkids. Like,
I'll be a grandfather this October. You're not too far away.
Whoa. Look, we got to wait.
It just,
at least all my kids get out of high school.
Yeah. I found you don't have a whole lot of control over it. Yeah. They just come and tell you one day, congratulations, you're going to be a grandfather.
No, that's when I pass out.
Have to be revived.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Great conversation.
It's crazy around here when my dad comes in because, you know, I feel that, you know, he can teach my kids a lot of things that I can't. So we have these conversations like, hey, you have to take them fishing because you can have those talks that I need to talk to them about, but you need to start it first.
Yeah. Where does he live? Like, you live in Orlando, right, Ken?
Yeah.
Where does your dad live?
He lives in Philly, but he comes down here because 9 grandkids live within about 60 miles of each other.
Oh, my goodness. How good is that?
So he's quite busy. He went from football, basketball, to baseball, to summer ball, back to football. And I'm like, he put on like 200,000 miles on his car in like 3 years. He just loves to be on the road and, you know, see his kids.
Well, I totally understand that. I mean, it's a special thing when you reach that age, when you look back and the memories that you have through the stories that you tell, and then the grandchildren, they pump you up. They actually give you life. They put a smile on your face, and you can't wait for those kids to come running over the hill. Your first thought is to lock the doors and turn out the lights, and then you realize they're too quick. They're in the house. So you better take the time to enjoy them.
Yeah, sitting on your couch going, hey.
Yeah, let's go. Grab a ball. Let's play.
I did get the conversation my wife asked me about a month ago. She says, what do you want to be called? Poppy, Grandpa? I said Emperor, but...
That got vetoed.
Yeah, that got vetoed. But we settled with Chief.
Cheeks?
Chief.
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 Chief's a good one. That's a good one. You had Jack came back last week. He played baseball with you. He played soccer. You went through all the stuff. Played football, and you were down. He was down there for like 4 or 5 hours, and said he ate dinner, did all kind of stuff, and I said, "Wow, you were down there a long time." Well, it would have been longer, but Papa got tired.
You only have so much energy.
What more can you do? 5 hours.
That's a long day.
But you do develop games where you don't have to get off the couch. That's the key. A certain point in time, you got to sit on the couch and toss the ball.
They're doing that. We make my dad take them to practice sometimes just to see. And my dad doesn't get out the car. He just looks at them. He's like, there he is. I'm like, where? He's like, he's right there. I'm like, you're not going to get out the car and watch? He's like, I can see him from here.
Now, that I totally understand.
That's next level stuff right there.
I'm like, wow.
Petra.
He was like, I used to do it to you, too, because you couldn't hit in front of me.
Oh,
hello. Yeah, I couldn't hit in front of my dad until I got my first hit, really, when I was in pro ball.
In front of your dad? That is amazing.
Yeah, because he wasn't there a whole lot. I tried to hit the five. You know, the biggest thing, you know, that you want to recognize, be recognized by your dad. And I couldn't do it. I'd pop up. He came to a game when he was with the Braves, and I was 0-for-2 strikeouts, and then I drove down at the end of the game. He said, what happened? I said, I went 3-for-5, 2 home runs and a double. He was like, what? I was like, yeah, one. Yeah. So he was like, just think I'm your mom. And he's yelling at me. I'm like, so I finally got a hit, and he was in an RV in left field, and we're at Tempe Diablo Stadium on the minor league side. I got a hit, and he slides the window open, and he yells out, now, was that so bad?
It's not that hard.
There's something to it. It's like that Wall Street Journal article I read. I mean, parents shouldn't go to every single game where the kids have to rely on looking over to them for approval or confidence, or, you know, they get nervous. There's something to that, them gaining that self-confidence on their own.
Have you tried to hire someone lately? It's hard, but it doesn't have to be. Thanks to our friends at LinkedIn. A business is only as strong as its people, and every hire matters. So don't settle for posting and hoping the right person will find your role and apply. LinkedIn is more than the world's largest professional network. It's also a better way to find great talent. 70% of the U.S. workforce is already on LinkedIn. Your quality candidates are right there, which is why businesses rate LinkedIn jobs 40% higher than job boards at delivering quality candidates. You post to job boards and hope that you find the right person for your job, but think about it. How often do you check job boards? For most people, it's a pretty occasional thing. But there is a place where people go daily to grow professionally and explore job opportunities. Again, as I mentioned, 70% of the U.S. workforce is right there on, you guessed it, LinkedIn. You already know LinkedIn is the world's largest professional network. Well, it's also a better way to find great talent. Just ask any of the hundreds of thousands of businesses who have posted to LinkedIn Jobs over the past year. And because LinkedIn considers skills, experiences, location, and more to match and promote your job to potential candidates, businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs 40% higher than job boards at delivering quality candidates. 22 million professionals view and apply jobs on LinkedIn every single week in every industry, even yours and mine. If you're not using LinkedIn for your hiring needs, you are missing out. So go to LinkedIn.com/attack and get $50 off your first job post. That's LinkedIn, LinkedIn.com/attack for $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. Hello, listeners to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. Help our podcast stay free to download with minimal ads by taking a short new survey from Podcast One. Responses will help align the appropriate advertisers to our audience. The survey is short and completely anonymous. It takes no more than 5 minutes. There are two easy ways to do the survey. You can go to podcastone.com/my survey or go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner. If you have filled out a survey in the past, we thank you, but we still need you to do it again. You do all of us at Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, and a Podcast One a huge favor by filling it out. Thank you for supporting our program and for taking the time to complete the survey. Once again, there are two easy ways to do the survey, podcastone.com/my survey or podcastone.com and click on the survey banner.
You're listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast.
Ken, when you were growing up in the 10, 11, 12-year-old, was it the Little League then? You had the Little League? Or did you have the kind of the sandlot type approach to baseball?
Oh, no, we played baseball 24 hours. When baseball season was around, I mean, we played wiffle ball in the backyard.
You know, that 24-hour baseball, you know, getting up in the morning and the telephone poles, first base, and you're out there with a bunch of guys, and someone has to make the lineup, you know, decide who's going to be playing right field and all that. I think in our day and age today, we've somewhat lost that, where we don't allow youngsters to play the game and umpire the game. I'd really be interested in your thoughts on that.
I coached Pop Warner football for 3 years. What was funny is, right before I retired, I made Melissa be a team mom to Tevin. And when I retired, she returned the favor by signing me up for coaches classes for me to coach. So the first year I was the roving instructor, offense and defense, just to look, because I wanted to see how coaches talk to kids. And the second year I was the assistant offensive coordinator. And the third year I was the offensive coordinator. But we run 20 minutes of practice of, you know, running through all our plays. And then I would run 5 minutes. So I'd run 15 minutes of, you give me 15 minutes and I'll let you guys draw up a play. Mm-hmm. So I let my 8-9-year-old draw up a play that we're going to run on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So they would run a play, you know, they would, here's the offensive line, here's what they need to do. So I wanted to give them an idea of how to think, while playing. So they weren't, you know, so they got two plays a year because we only had, you know, four guys in the backfield. Mm-hmm. You guys, you know, we'd run the first week and we'd run the second week. And you'd come up with your own play. And you'd name your own play. And you would run through the blocking scheme. Mm-hmm. You know, when the guy's in motion and things like that, you called it on one or two. And you were the quarterback for that play. Even though you were a running back, you would be the, you know, you called the play. And we'd run it. We had, you know, one kid was a Viking, one kid was a Gator, a Saints, and then Tevin was a Michael Vick fan. So that was the play.
Yeah, you give them the title.
I still have them written down.
You still have the
but
plays?
You're right. Nobody teaches. Oh, yeah, I still got the plays.
How many touchdowns did you get out of those plays that they would call?
We'd run them at the beginning of the game, like the first play of the game, because that's what they wanted.
Uh-huh.
I let them vote. We scored probably 3 or 4 touchdowns.
Oh, wow.
With them drawing up the plays, you know they're going to get it right. They're going to.
Well, because they're going to learn. And yeah. It's fun for them because they get to, you know, it's like they're the coach.
Yeah.
And they get to do it.
I might use that. That's good.
You know, and 3 years, I mean, when they were 10, so 5 years, they're still calling me coach when they see me.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. And I tell all, you know, I ask coaches all the time, I say, you want to be a coach or a teacher? And they go, I want to be a teacher. I'm like, no, you really want to be a coach.
Yeah.
And they're like, why? I said, a coach has an impact on somebody's life. A teacher doesn't really have an impact if you only see him once a year. I said, no matter where I'm at, if I see one of my coaches, I'm going to go say hi to him. I don't necessarily go see a teacher, but I will go see a coach.
That's a good point. Do you, in football, a little bit, even at the professional level on like Thursday or Friday, Jim, don't they sit down with you as a quarterback and give me your five best plays or yep. plays you're most comfortable with?
Yep. Anything you don't want in the game plan, we take out. Anything that they really like, we make sure we get it in early, get it in the first 15. Yeah, very, 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 very important to have the quarterbacks running the plays that they like and not the ones that they don't like.
Yeah, it makes it tough when they don't like a play. And you like they look yeah. at you like, really? Like deer in headlights. Like, really, we got to run this one?
I don't think this one's going to work. That's not good.
So before we wrap up, Junior, I want to know when there was a pitcher on the mound, right, the guy that you could not wait to go against because you know today was going to be a good day, and then the opposite, a guy that you're like, oh, boy, this guy's bringing it today. Who were those two guys throughout your career?
I really didn't have very many guys that I didn't want to hit against.
As your averages and Hall of Fame career would indicate.
I would say, like, if you were to pick one pitcher in a 3-year span, I'd say Pedro.
Pedro.
Yeah, from 98 to 2000, I was like, ooh. Like, you're hoping to get, like, a walk or he has, like, a bad day. Like, you could go 0-3 and be happy with it because you didn't go 0-4. And a guy that it'd probably be any lefty, having a dad who was lefty throwing to me, I felt more comfortable.
Interesting.
If I was in a slump that I would go up against a lefty. I mean, David Wells, I had like 7 or 8 home runs against, I think I had Roger for 7. I think I had, Flash Gordon for 6 or 7. I mean, but having a lefty where I have to keep my shoulder tucked in, because sometimes you get in a situation where that front shoulder flies out. You need somebody that you got to really concentrate on keeping it in there because you're not going to get a hit. It
kind of debunks the old lefty versus the lefty.
Well, when you grow up against left-handed, a guy who's left-handed, it makes it a little easier.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, the easiest thing is if a guy has a cutter, a left-handed pitcher has a cutter, I'm going to stick every lefty I can in that lineup because he's going to throw that. If that's his number one pitch is a cutter, he's going to throw it 90% of the time. I mean, you look at Pettit, I knew that what I was going to get was going to be the fastball. He's going to try to run it in, but he's going to throw the cutter away. He just hit it away. And there's not a whole lot of guys like Randy Johnson who's left-handed that throws, 97 or above. So you can stay in there a little longer.
Very interesting.
No wonder we weren't very good hitters.
we were bunners.
Plus, I wasn't afraid to get drilled. I mean, I was talking
maybe that was our problem.
How many times did you get pegged during your career, Junior? Do you know?
Yeah, I do. Wade Boggs, I'll give you an idea. Wade Boggs and I played the same amount of time. He got hit 22 times. I got hit like 82 times.
Wow. Wow.
Did you ever go to the mound for a guy? Did you ever go after one?
No. I'd rather make them pay by jumping that ERA up. If I can take money out their pocket by beating them, then I'd do that.
I love that philosophy.
Because that's the whole thing. I mean, there's certain pitchers like, yeah, okay, you threw one at me.
Yeah.
All right, I'll get you. And then every pitcher who pretty much hit me that I knew was on purpose, I took deep.
That's awesome.
Yes, and we do keep book.
Athletes all seem to know all the important numbers. Ken, one of the all-time greats, Ken Griffey Jr., joining us here on the podcast. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Junior.
Thanks, Ken.
Ken, this is Jack
Thank
Harbaugh. Please give your dad our very best.
All right. The next time I'm going to hold him down and I'm going to tell him that he's coming on with me.
We love it.
Look forward to that.
We absolutely love it.
That was the legendary Baseball Hall of Famer Ken Griffey Jr. Now, here are some useful car tips you might not be aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. And you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. Weird, right? But it actually works. I've tried it. Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Coming up next on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, Jack Talk.
This is Jack Talk.
I want to listen. I want to be better. I want to be the best I can be.
Welcome to our team. The team.
Jack Talk.
As you get older, you get to be 78 years old. Here's what I find. Hair grows in places that it hadn't been before.
Welcome to hashtag Jack Talk.
It's now time for everybody's favorite segment of the week, Jack Talk, here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. And Jack, it's only fitting that with it being Father's Day and this time of year, we talk a lot about fathers and sons. We just heard a great interview with Ken Griffey Jr. Obviously, talk about his relationship with his dads. I do have one quick question before we get into the Jack Talk. Why is it that there are different rules when you were the dad versus now that when you're the granddad? Because I see it with my dad. I'm listening to you guys all talk, and I'm like, this is universal. This is for everybody. All grandparents are different.
Ira, you don't plan it. It's not anything that you plan. You say, well, I become a grandfather, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. It's something that's inside you. It's something you're born with. It's in your DNA for all fathers and grandfathers. You change. Your whole personality changes. And your kids will look at you and say, are you the same person? Has somebody from outer space captured your body? And your mind is totally different? If we would have done what these grandkids did, there would be all hell to pay. I mean, there'd be spoons coming out of the drawers. I mean, there'd be switches taken off trees to handle that. And what you'd, oh, he's saying he's such a sweet thing. Don't worry about it. It can be fixed.
Yeah, that's not how it was.
And you want to tell them, you know, like, don't raise your voice at your children. And they're, don't raise your voice.
That's all you did.
Who
was
are
raise your
you?
Voice. It's funny because as you guys are talking with Ken, I'm going, wow, it's a very universal thing. And he said, probably not planned.
No, it's not planned.
But it happens anyway.
And your eating habits just go to hell. I mean, if it's chocolate, you want them to have it. I mean, you have it. I mean, we have a bowl at our house. It's about a foot high and about a foot wide with Oreos in it. Why? Because they like Oreos. First place they go, they don't say, hey, Papa, how you doing? Or, yay, good to see you. It's a quick, hard left right to the Oreo. In there they go. It's not one. Remember, you're a kid. You can only have one. There's starving kids all over the world. You can only have one. They go in there with a handful, and then the hand is so full of Oreos that when they come out of the jar, you know, you can't get them out, so they go all over the floor. So now you're picking up Oreo crumbs as a grandpa. You don't tell them to pick up their own mess, as you would with your own children. You're sweeping up the Oreo crumbs and smile on your face. Oh, look, these Oreos all broke when they hit the floor. Oh, my goodness. And you have and you enjoy it, and you have no qualms, no feeling at all other than love.
I can confirm this. I witnessed this. When my wife and I were at your house a few weeks ago, we witnessed this. It's they do give you the hello, but before the hugs, they usually do beeline right over towards those the Oreos.
The Oreos.
And so it's, you know, it happens. And so it's nice to hear that it's a universal thing, that it's not just, you know, my parents with their granddaughter, or it seems like it's because Ken co-signed is because Jim's looking at you like, yeah, Dad. What's going on with this?
Well,
yeah, Dad.
And they never tell you in front of the kids. They always go, what has happened to you? Are you all right? Should we take? Do we need to take you in and have you checked out? Are you, because this isn't you.
This is a great segue now into our Jack Talk conversation about discipline.
I was reading an article the other day. It was an interesting article about raising children. It was, this guy's a doctor or something. Can't remember if it was he or she. And they're talking about, we need to change the way we raise our children. You know, we can't raise our voice, and we're going to make a decision. We include them in the conversation. And I'm all for that, including them in. But they only have about a half vote. I mean, it's not a full vote. They should know that going into the conversation. Until you reach about 18, then you get a three quarters of a vote. But it's not a full vote in what we're doing. But I'm reminded Bobby Knight, you know, the great Bobby Knight, basketball coach at Indiana University, read one time where he described the word discipline. And I think in every family, whether it's your family at work or whether it's your family at home, the foundation of the family is discipline. But it's a misunderstood word, maybe as misunderstood as any word in the English language. Because what we look at as discipline is the result of not being disciplined. You're going to go on into timeout. That seems to be a big thing. You know, you're going to curfew tonight is 9 o'clock or whatever when they get older. But it's always the result of not being disciplined. And Bobby described that, and he went on to say what discipline really was. And again, in raising children and our children and grandchildren, it's really four things. Number one, know what has to be done. That's my job as a parent, my job as a boss. Your job to understand what I'm saying. Then the next thing is knowing when it has to be done. There's a deadline. No, this is going to be, we're expecting this to be done in the next week. We're expecting this homework assignment to be turned in on time. We're expecting that you'll be up at 8:30 when we suggest that you be up at 8:30 in the morning to do this or that or the other thing. What has to be done, when it has to be done. That are the two top. Then you go to the one, do it the best of your God-given ability. So many times, youngsters get into trouble. You ask them to take out the trash. And then they give you, I want it out in 5 minutes. The trash will be out in 5 minutes. You told them what has to be done, when it has to be done. Then I want it done to the best of your God-given ability. Don't pick it up with one hand and it spill all over the floor, because now we have a real serious problem. Or don't go stumbling down the steps and it all goes over the, and I have to go out, or we have to get it cleaned up. Do it the best of your God-given ability. That's the only task today that you're going to do the best that you possibly can do. Three. Number four, each and every time it's asked of you. Know what has to be done, when it has to be done, the best of your God-given ability, every time it's asked of you. There are no problems. We go through life smoothly. But there will be bumps. But if you didn't, you know what had to be done, when it had to be done, you always go back to that. So I think Bobby Knight was onto something. Why I have said this to our kids, John, Jim, and Joni. I haven't done it with the grandkids yet because I'm not ready. You know, as with earlier conversation, I'm not ready to go into great detail in parenting with them yet. But Jim came up with one. He added a fifth one: the first time it's asked of you. So he put an addendum on the four. So that with the foundation and I don't think you have to worry about that. It was about a chapter in detail that this was written by this psychologist or this sociologist or whatever kind of ologist they were. And I think they could have wrapped it up in 1, 2, 3, 4.
And I like the five. I like the five. I like the fifth one too, which is the first time I ask. The first time you're told, the first time you're asked. Because really, step four is just remembering steps 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
And step five is making sure you don't have to have steps 1, 2, and 3 repeated to you over and over and over again.
And then that, as a parent, now I'm talking about those parents out there that are sitting there and saying, golly, doesn't it just upset you to no end to know you have to repeat when it has to be done, you know, time that you expect it to be done in? Do it the best. That you have to repeat any of those seems redundant.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have a poster board made in time for kindergarten for Grace so that she knows steps 1, 2, 3 and how 4 and 5 basically repeat 1, 2, and 3 without me having to repeat myself over and over again. I don't know how long it takes for that discipline to kick in. But, you know, I'll admit, you know, when you start at like age 3 or whatever and you're like, don't do this or don't do that, and then they ask you all kinds of questions, eventually it sticks. And the thing is, I do give Grace a choice. You can either go to your timeout chair or you can go to your room and close the door. Those are choices. You may not like either of them, but you have a choice. There are other times where it's choose. Do you want M&Ms or do you want a cookie? Those are great choices. We love those choices, and she can pick one or the other. And sometimes you don't necessarily like your choices very much, but we're giving you a choice.
And I think that's discipline. And we, when we were young, I know it was fathers, grandfathers out there, and fathers that are a little bit older, you know, being raised. I mean, they remember the cookie, the wooden cookie, no, the wooden spoon, the wooden spoon. Jackie was a wooden spooner. I don't think I went with my dad. That was my dad's. I don't think I ever went with that. I think I was a kind of a
just point and tell
a threat. I think it's a threat. I think what I'm trying to imply is a threat of what could happen. I never had to go over the line, but
as all that matters is that the threat is there for the goal to be accomplished. And if, therefore, your kids responded to the discipline without you ever having to go through with what your threat was, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't do it. Yeah. It just means that they lived up to expectations, yeah. So yeah. You didn't have to do yeah. it.
And then they get to the point where they trust you. They trust you that you're there. You love them. Love them. No one will love you more than your parents will love you. I promise you. A wife will not love you, in my judgment, maybe as much. I don't want to go that far, but no one, no coach, no teacher, no preacher, no lawyer, no doctor, no Indian chief will love you more than your parents. And when they ask you to do something, it's because they love you. Listen.
Really good point. My wife's son's going off to, he'll be an engineering student at Michigan in the fall. So obviously really proud of him. And we were at the new parent orientation. And one of the lines in, you know, when your kid might experience a problem, talking about homesickness and some other stuff, but one of the things they taught you when you drop the kid off at school and you're driving away because you're leaving, trust your parenting. Yeah. Because just because you're not there to parent anymore doesn't mean you're not there to parent anymore. Because if you've done your job as a good parent, those lessons have been absorbed and for the most part will probably be adhered to. Not all the time. We can't guarantee that. These are college kids. But a lot of those lessons that you taught will be adhered to, because I think they also know that right on the other end of a phone call or a text message or an email or whatever is that parent that can still get that thread across and therefore get it accomplished.
My mother, love her soul. I mean, she was such an absolute angel. She used to come up with this. Parents in those days came up with strange things. And the strangest thing my mother used to say, and she used to say it a lot, she would check in the morning to see that your socks were clean and your underwear was clean. And I'd say, Mom, what's the difference? My underwear is under my pants. You can't really see whether it's clean or not. And she would come up with this thing. She would say, what if you got into an accident and they took you in the hospital? How badly I would feel if your socks and your underwear, if they weren't clean. So parenting, we've come a long way. I don't know do parents do that? You would know, Ira. You're a modern parent. Do you guys, you get into any of that dialogue?
We get some dialogue. We try, you know, but I leave most of the worst, I'll say worst is not the right word, the harshest of the disciplining, I leave that to my wife. The good cop, bad cop thing that parents did for years, it still works, and I am more than happy for the most part to be the good cop. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
I don't know if anyone saw Jim's tweet on Father's Day, but it was by Father Hesburgh, former president at Notre Dame University, and the tweet that he put out under Theodore Hesburgh's name was, "The greatest gift that a father can bestow upon his children is to love his mother." Love his mother daily and not be, and he didn't say this, but it's, and when you tell her you love her, make sure the kids are there to hear it. So many times we tell our wives we love them, but it's in the privacy of our home. But how good it is for the children to hear their father tell their mother how much he loves them. And I thought it was a great, great tweet.
And on this post-Father's Day edition of Attack Each Day of the Harbaugh's podcast, that's a perfect way to end it. Talking about fathers, but still giving our love to the moms, because when in doubt, they say daddy first. But what do they say when they score a big touchdown or win a big race?
Hi, mom.
Hi, mom. So there is that, although you and little Jack have a great game day relationship, sharing all of his great accomplishments, and we love hearing about those here on the podcast as well. You can contact us using hashtag Jack Talk or on Twitter at AED Podcast, or you can reach me at Ira in Ann Arbor. You can follow us and favorite us on PodcastOne.com and the Podcast One app. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Thanks to Podcast One. Thanks to all of our great sponsors, including TrueCar. And have a great week and keep attacking each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.